Italian Wine Podcast. Cin cin with Italian wine people.
So let's begin the podcast with you today, Pedro Ballesteros, Master of Wine. We've just finished the Vinitaly International Academy education course. What were your takeaways from the Vinitaly International Academy as one who is also already a master of wine? How did it go? How did you see it?
Well, I think it is an excellent initiative. I think it's to make Italian wines much more attractive by making those wines, by explaining those wines, by helping a number of people to have a much deeper knowledge on the Italian wines and the things that you know, you tend to love them more. So I think it's a very intelligent approach. It has nothing to do with promotion. It's real education, formation. It is just to trust that the raw material of Italian wines is so interesting that it is enough. If there is a good number of intelligent people all over the world that are knowledgeable about Italian wines. And it was very interesting for me. I was studying a lot and there were some difficult things, and Italy is one of those infinite countries that you never know the whole of Italy and that you are discovering new varieties and new expressions. It's really fascinating.
I mean, you made a very good point there about the complexity of Italian wine. How do you, you know, from someone who's obviously very good at studying, how do you help a student that is a bit stuck? Do you have any just tips?
Yes, I would say, I think that the key element for studying is it is motivation. And the motivation is not something that is a fixed point of reference. It's something that goes up and down, up and down. And we have to understand this. We have to love ourselves enough to know that some days we are not going to be very good at studying, or other days we are going to be much better than what we could anticipate. But we have to keep in mind a certain motivation. We need to know what we are looking for. And I think that the other crucial element, many students, they fail because they don't consider this element. And with wine, it's even more important, is that you don't need to study thinking, I will be that and that and that. You need to enjoy what you study, because if you don't enjoy what you are learning about the wines, even if sometimes are difficult things, there is not any point on studying about wine. Then you can decide to study, I don't know, administrative right or whatever thing, no? But wine has to be about enjoyment. And then there is not any merit. Then if you enjoy what you are doing, what you are learning, is something that is part of your life, and you care much less about the result, and then the results normally are much better.
Okay. You may have lectured on Canonau to the Vinitaly International Academy students within the past few months. Do you have any words on how this particular grape variety connects the populations of the Mediterranean or brings us closer together?
Yes, the Canonau is the Spanish Grenache, the French Grenache. There are, of course, many discussions where the grape variety was born, etc. This is not very important. The important thing is it's a grape variety that has been for many years considered as something not very interesting compared to Cabernet, Merlot, these other kind of varieties. Many people used to say it was oxidative and things like this, and it was only after, in poor regions of Europe, in Sardinia, in Aragon, in Spain, the people, they have access to technology to look at their land in a different way than Canonau. Garnacha became a very noble grape variety and capable of making very good wines. Garnacha has been in many parts of the world. It has been traveling from Aragon to the west, to Rioja and to Extremadura, to the east, to Catalonia, to the north, to Châteauneuf-du-Pape, and to the Rhone Valley, Sardinia, you have the Tao Rosso in Veneto, there is a lot of Grenache in Australia. They used to be much more, now there is less, but there is very high quality wines there with Grenache. Also in California, it's amazing how much Grenache you can find all over the world. And it's amazing how much of a different character it has. You know, I always say Cabernet Sauvignon is an egocentric character. In any place in the world, Cabernet would be Cabernet. And you can spot this is a Cabernet wine, and you don't care where the wine is, it's Cabernet wine. Garnacha, Grenache, Canonau, it is a conditional altruistic personality. It's altruistic because Canonau is going to tell you where the vineyard is. It's not going to tell you I'm Canonau. It's going to tell you I'm coming from that particular vineyard. And it's conditional because if you want to get a very high yield, if you want to get very modern expressions out of Canonau, if you don't respect the very nature of Canonau, you will not have very noble wines. It's very conditional because you need low yields, old vines. It's very important that the vines in this climate so, so dry, they have many years to explore the soil, and then you will have the personalities of a place. Because of that, at the end of the day, it's not so important if the wine is Canonau, Grenache, or Garnacha. It's important that the wine is coming from that particular area. And Sardinia, in this, I think they have excelled in producing very good Canonau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you on that about it being a great vehicle when it's grown well of terroir expression. And often it's in a grape that's a little bit, as you say, ignored and abused. But yeah, interesting to hear your point on that. Now, let's talk about Cava. How are you working to elevate the profile of Cava, which is obviously a sparkling wine, on the world stage?
Well, this is a good question because it's a difficult question. Cava was invented as champagne. It was called champagne at the time. It was the Catalan imitation of champagne. The important thing there was to follow the method champenoise, the second fermentation in bottle. Then it was a big success at national level. There was a middle class that was thirsty of bubbles, and bubbles are very important when one thinks that the life is getting better. And little by little, the companies in Cava, mostly Codorníu and Freixenet, they developed very good technical skills, and they started looking at the vineyard, and they realized that the autochthonous grape varieties of the Penedès, Charello, Parellada, Macabeu, they were ideal for having very good quality sparkling wines. Then some small companies started also investigating on very long aging time on the lees in the bottle for Cava, and there was a new quality that was discovered. And then finally, now there are some Cavas, Recaredo, Gramona, that are in very particular spots, very in single vineyards, and are an amazing quality. Cavas that they need to be aged on the lees for at least 8 to 10 years, even 12 years. And then there is something wonderful in the bottle. The problem for Cava is that most Cava is an affordable, good quality wine with the method champenoise that is maybe too expensive for the wine, but is not very ambitious in this quality. And the small producers that they would like to be identified according to their quality, they feel a little bit lost with so big producers producing very cheap wine. Cava now is in a strong competition with Prosecco. Prosecco, I think they have been very smart. Prosecco is amazingly interesting as a wine. I will speak on this. But Cava, now there are a lot of tensions there. There is a number of wineries. They have created a private association. They are getting out of the appellation of origin. At the same time, that Cava is improving a lot because they have created a new regulation for specifying the single vineyards for higher requirements on quality. And now you have very, very good cavas that are of extremely high quality. But the real thing is that very, very good cava is maybe 10% of the production. The other thing is a commercial quality wine that is made according to the méthode champenoise, etc. This is always an argument. But at the end of the day, is a simple, good wine, but not very ambitious. It has not so much to do with champagne in this respect. In this, Cava is competing with Prosecco, but Prosecco is wonderful. These are things that the Italian, they never say about their country. Italy is the only country in the world that has developed a very good market strategy by cooperatives. The cooperatives in Emilia-Romagna, in Veneto, are really world leaders. The Pinot Grigio, the Prosecco, the Lambrusco are inventions by cooperatives. This is something that deserves a lot of respect. When you are creating a lot of wealth in the regions, very well distributed wealth among all the vine growers, thanks to the cooperative, and you are having a product that commercially is extremely well defined, and it is having a huge success in the world markets, I think this is something that deserves a lot of admiration. I would like to see this much more in my country, in Spain, in France, in many other countries in which you see that the successes are just a private firm with a different thing, and that the wealth of wine is not so well distributed as in Italy.
It's interesting that you focused at the end on that social element, the socioeconomic element about the wealth being spread more or less evenly across the board. And that's something that in wine we often forget the importance of that. And it's a very, very strong point that you've made there about the need for that to continue.
Absolutely. And this is, it is not only because of a social concern. It's simply just to have a certain vision of the business. If you are having the vine growers, that they have good quality of life, that they can think that one of their daughters or sons can become a vine grower, and that this is going to be a job with a lot of dignity and a lot of hope and many good things, you are paying well the grapes, you will keep a certain level of quality. If you are simply exploiting the growers, as it is the case often in Spain, paying nothing for the grapes, then sooner or later, the whole business is going to disappear. For me, the big difference between Prosecco and Cava in Spain, the people say, no, because Cava is better than Prosecco because we use the Champenoise method and the Prosecco is the Charmant method. I don't know what. And I always say, no, Prosecco is much better. Simply because in Prosecco, they pay 0.98 euro per kilo of grapes, more than 16,000 kilos per hectare. And in Cava, they pay 32 cents of an euro per kilo of grapes, yields of 10,000 kilos per hectare. One business model is sustainable, the other not.
Okay, that's talking about wine. Let's talk about wine judging. What are your impressions of the wine judging circuit? Somewhere in the world, every single day, there will be a wine competition being held. What are your views and your impressions?
Well, I think that wine judging is a good idea. If it is well organized, I think it's a very good indication to the consumers. It's also a very good feedback for the producers. But not all wine competitions are the same. And I think that now there are far too many wine competitions. And I would say that I would doubt in many wine competitions which is the point of paying attention to what this judge is doing, when sometimes they simply are ticking boxes and saying this is 86 or this is 92, and no comments and no discussion and no knowledge about the wines, no? I think that producers, consumers, and distributors, they should be quite strict as per the requirements for a wine competition. Now is also the time for the wine producers and for the distribution, the great distribution, to say, I like this competition, I want to know how it is, and I don't like this other competition because the judges, they don't have the profile, or because the system is not very good. And then for the consumers, you can have a wine. I'm sure that if you send any correct, good wine to 20 competitions, you will get a medal in at least one or two of them. And this is something, just to put a question, I think that it's important now that there is a certain movement that is certifying the quality of wine competitions. And this is not just to say this is a competition according to OIV rules, that me personally, I'm completely against those rules. It's a nonsense. The OIV rules is you cannot speak with anybody, you know nothing about the wine, you are not allowed to comment on the wine, you have to tick boxes, and you have to say how much, what do you think of the color of the wine. How can you think about the color of a wine? Which is the indication of quality on this, no? And many other things, no? But I think it's important. I think there are so many wines, so many small producers, that you need competitions. But I think that competitions now, there are far too many, and there should be a kind of a quality seal for wine competitions.
Mm-hmm. You mean for the judges or for the competition itself?
For both.
Okay. So what is an effect, you know, if you're sitting down at a table and you've got 3 days of tasting ahead of you, and you're going to have three or four people on your table, what qualities do you want to see in those judges?
The first quality I would like to see is a little bit of experience. And if they don't have experience, I would like to see, and this was my case many, many years ago, last century, when there was an International Wine Challenge, the judges, they were classified according to categories. They were the associate judge, somebody who was being trained in order to become a judge, the judge, the senior judge, and the super jurors. And this is, I think, it's already a very good thing to have a classification of judges and to indicate the judges you have to learn and you have to follow a learning process. Then the second thing I would like to see with the judges is their capacity to work in teams and to put their ego out, just to concentrate on the wine. I couldn't care less if a wine judge likes or dislikes a wine. This is of no interest whatsoever. The important thing is that a wine judge is spotting a number of characteristics of this wine and is measuring these characteristics against a certain pattern. And then the third, and as important as the other two characteristics, is that I would like judges that are humble people, members of a team, and that they realize that they are just vehicles for elaborating an opinion on a wine, an informed opinion on a wine, and that they are so likely to be wrong in 20% of the cases that it is very much in their interest to speak with other people that have also left their ego out of the table in order to taste and retaste, in order to consider all the elements of wine. We, the people who are judging wines, we have a fundamental problem. It's a problem that didn't happen in the past. The fundamental problem is the great wines, they need time. Time to be judged, time to be enjoyed. You cannot be tasting wines one at a minute and to taste 100 wines in a day, or to taste, as some very famous prescriptors are so proud of, 10,000, 12,000 wines a year. This is simply it's something very banal, very, very narrow. You need time, but we don't have this time. we need also to look at the economies of competitions, etc. The only way of overcoming partially this shortage is by having frank discussions with people you trust, with people that you don't feel that you have to be in a defensive with them, and to accept that you may be wrong and that the collective knowledge is always much better than the addition of the individual knowledges.
Interesting. It's a lot of common sense there in terms of the judge. I always say to my judges, tell me what you like about the wine, and then you can tell me what you didn't like about the wine. But don't start with the negative, start with the positive, because it's very easy to get a bit of negativity around a table, and once it's there, it never goes away. Anyway, this, amazing interview. We could talk for probably a couple of hours, but we'll get told off. I think what we should do is we can stop here, and we can have another podcast with you, hopefully very soon, and we can dig deeper into your extraordinary knowledge and your extraordinary way of explaining big issues very simply and very no wonder you're an incredible educator. The way you talk is very, very effective, and I've really, really enjoyed listening to you today. It's been a privilege to be the person asking the questions, really. I just want to say thanks to Pedro. I want to say, hope to see you soon, and we'll have another podcast, I promise, okay?
When you want. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, Monty.
Take it
thanks
easy.
Thanks a lot.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.